From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Boy, lads, welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm your host, Hunter Deucing, down in Dallas, Texas. Just enjoying a little of the some of the Queen's bitters here, and basking in our victories over the Jerrys. And yeah, you know, just thinking about our victories in that Second World War. And I'm joined by one of our Yank friends who helped us win that war, Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Howdy.
Good day. And also joining me is Mr. Stuart Bulk down in Stryia. You know, they helped us out at the Battle of Gallipoli in the Great War. Well, Gibson tried to get that message there in time, but, you know, good effort.
Well, we just basically fucked all the soldiers' wives while they were out fighting. So, spreading that convict seed around.
Now, listen, that's just not, just because we're Poms does not mean.
What?
I don't know.
I think that was the plot of Stork, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Australians are like, you go fight the squareheads, we'll just screw your national health teeth, women. Oh, gosh.
Man. So yeah, we're all here. We're all joined, all three of us, and we're talking about.
It's been a while since that's happened.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. I got married, you know, major life event. You went on vacation and.
I petted some kangaroos and a koala, and that's true. Yeah, it is a real.
You gotta be careful. All those koalas have chlamydia. You know that, right?
They have koalamydia, not chlamydia.
Koalamydia.
Actually, the koala that we all got photos taken with was called Gumnuts.
What?
That was the koala's name, Gumnuts. So what would happen is we'd go to the Sanctuary Wildlife Park, and there is literally kangaroos hopping around everywhere. It is not a joke. I've only ever had experiences with kangaroos where the wild ones out in the...
Like the ones that are super swole that come up and attack you in the street.
Yeah, they you know, jump in front of your car and knock your car and all that sort of stuff. So these are the tame roos that have been raised from Joey's into full size. And they're just hopping around. You come pat them and just feed them and all that sort of stuff. Like, they're everywhere. There is literally dingoes there. I mean, I made a Meryl Streep joke, like, oh, you know.
You didn't take your babies with any babies.
No, no. Yeah. I said, yeah, you know, I told my youngest, don't become like a Zarya. Just stay back from the cage, you know. And you bet there's literally roos everywhere, there's wombats, and there's an area where they've just got koalas in trees, and you get to sit with one, get pictures taken with one. And holy shit, that's the first koala I've ever seen in my life, and they are some big bastards.
Yeah, they're big. Seriously. When I see pictures of them with people, I'm like, oh, those aren't tiny little cute bears. Those things, you know, you can hold them, but they look like they weigh a bit, you know?
Well, you can't actually hold them. The groundskeeper who deals with them actually holds them. And the koala just sits there eating gum leaves. Doesn't even know you're there. Doesn't even really care you're there.
Yeah, they always have this blank stare.
They do, because they're always eating. They're like Fidelity, just always eating, you know?
they have this blank stare, like there's no intelligence there, but it's just the look a human has when it's consuming carbs, you know? You know, you're just high off the carbs, you know, and
it's like, Schwarzenegger, you know? Looking for his carrot cake in
I eat cheese fries, I have that look in my eyes, because it's like drugs, you know?
Saturated fat and carbs, and you know, it's just, you just blank out, you just become like Michael Myers in, you know, in the asylum, just blanking out.
Like Michael Myers looking at a babysitter, just, you know, just.
So now we know what the problem was with Michael Myers. He was just wiped out on carbs and melted cheese. If he had a healthy diet, it might have been okay.
But people talk about the opioid crisis, but the carb crisis is much worse. You know, when it comes to effects on humans.
Those damn loaded freedom fries you sell. Freedom fries. Oh, God.
They got their cheese and their chives and sour cream. I don't know. What else do they put in loaded fries?
Everything.
Ranch dressing. There you go. Bits ranch of dressing.
Bits of Teflon from the fry pan. Bits of copper lying around. You name it. If it's lying around.
From the iron skillet, you fry. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all healthy, I guess. Not. But
indeed.
Yeah, but that was my holiday. Just went out to the wildlife sanctuary for one day anyway. And, went to the gym when I was there at the resort we're at. You guys, I got to ask you something. Because you guys both do training, you know. Gym, you guys ever use one of those vibration plates?
No. I've never used a sneak weight before. I'm sorry.
They are fucking insane.
Never used them.
Never used them. Do they have them at your gyms or not? Are they sort of counteractive, counterproductive?
I don't think they have them where I go.
Yeah, right.
I don't think I've seen one. I don't think I have. I belong to like several different gyms, and I haven't seen any.
Yeah, I don't think gyms really keep them, but this one did. And I jumped on one. And I'm like, oh yeah. Popped it on. Next thing, it was like an SNL skit. Then we fucking flew off the thing. It's just vibrating that hard. But, damn, if your body isn't sore the next day from just doing those things. God, it was strong. So, we're going to buy one for the house here. We really enjoyed it.
So, send a shake weight to Stuart Balk in Australia address. No, I'm kidding.
Please do. I got some photos. My daughter took some photos of me petting in kangaroos. I'm like, where the fuck did this stomach come from? I'm really not that fat. But, yeah.
Well, cameras do flatten features.
Yes.
Yeah, fat and features. I mean, more like it.
Yeah, it's like that's why actors have to remain so thin, or they become character actors because the camera does add weight.
Unless you're like John Candy or Chris Farley, where you don't really care. Well,
then it's kind of accepted. You know, you're gonna be that way. Michael Moore, mm-hmm. Just wants it.
Yeah.
Oh, he lost a few pounds when he did Sicko. To not look like a hypocrite. And then, I remember he looked a little like he lost maybe 20 pounds, but then he put it all back on immediately.
Oh,
after.
Of course.
Yeah.
It was for the publicity campaign. He was because, of course, if you're Michael Moore and you're doing a documentary about healthcare, what's the first thing people are going to say? Even Michael Moore's not stupid enough to know that that's going to be the first thing like Breitbart attacks him with. So he was doing this like, I know I'm trying to lose weight. But then, capitalism, a love story comes out and he's bigger than ever, So.
Right, he's one of those that would have to do lap band surgery probably because he just can't keep his hands off the food.
It's like he goes from 400 pounds down to 380 and goes, 20 pounds, yes, let's celebrate, and then lets himself back up to 420, it winds up back at 420. So
it's time to celebrate with food. And now, we come back to the reason I'm big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bucket of loaded fries on a daily basis.
Emotional eating and a bucket of loaded fries and gravy.
Yeah.
Mm.
New job, writer for the OKC.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
So the movie we're talking about today is Dunkirk by the greatest filmmaker of all time, Christopher Nolan. The greatest of all time. Greatest of all time. He's influenced by James Bond.
Did anybody see the 1958 or whatever version of this?
No.
What was it called?
I think it was just called Dunkirk.
It was called Dunkirk, dummy.
Nesbitt had mentioned it. I've never seen it. I don't think it's easy to find. They probably suppressed it while this was in theaters.
No, I got a Blu-ray release here recently.
In Australia, where they actually care about old movies.
Yeah
here they just don't care.
It's, I think it was like
dull.
Well, I remember whenever a remake or something would come out and you'd get blitzed by the original.
That does not happen
anymore.
It's kind of like a lot of people forget there was a version of The Thin Red Line with Keir D'Elia from 2001 A Space Odyssey. Nobody remembers that exists. You can watch it on YouTube. But there was, there's another version of that.
Was it?
Novel. Yeah, that was from a long time ago, like the 60s.
Yeah. Right, and Eric Zoldover had pointed out recently that Meet the Parents, the De Niro Stiller movie, is a remake of an independent Chicago film.
No, it's like Father of the Bride, remake of a Spencer Tracy movie.
Yeah.
Right. Very young, with a very young Dr. Jacoby.
But in the weird case of Meet the Parents, Universal bought the rights to the original film and never released it on video. Like, you can't find it. You might be able to find a bootleg.
It's on DVD. I've seen it on DVD at the store.
Is it?
Yeah.
I have never seen it. Like, I was trying to find it on Amazon. It's not there.
It might be out of print, but I've seen it at Movie Trading Company. But it's a regular feature on TCM. I know TCM plays.
The original Meet the Parents?
Oh, no, not. I'm sorry. I'm talking about Father of the Bride. Sorry.
Yeah, Father of the Bride. I mean, that's a classic film.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay, never mind. We're on the wrong page. Meet the Parents? Nope. Never seen it.
Spencer Tracy. I mean, all those movies, you're pretty much in print on TCM packages and stuff.
But yeah. No, that one you can find. But yeah, Meet the Parents. I didn't even know that was a remake.
Yeah, it's been suppressed. I watched a PBS special that's on YouTube where they interview the filmmaker. And he said when I signed the remake rights to Universal, somewhere in the paperwork it said they basically owned the film. Like almost they'd stolen the movie from him, but he wasn't bitter because I guess he was paid.
Yeah, you got paid, you know.
Yeah. Supposedly his version's funnier. Like it's darker.
It can't be any worse. Scale. I mean, my God, that original was
I know. I mean, that's not a movie that has came off that great when I saw it back in 2000.
What the shit?
So,
what were you out of Dunkirk, are you? My goodness.
I am at Dunkirk, actually. I'm hanging out with the Luftwaffe here.
Is Tom Hardy mumbling through his radio?
He's talking through the mask. I was murdered by it.
Yeah, what is it? I think Nolan's deaf. Like, a lot of times, the dialogue is never clear.
Yeah, I remember when the Dark Knight Rises trailer came out, they had to go back and alter Bane's dialogue because nobody could understand him in the trailer.
I think Nolan might be deaf or he might have hearing issues or something. Something about the sound editing in his movies is a little murky.
Murky.
You know, what a shame that Lemmy wasn't around to see this one. He would have really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
Then he would have written a song.
You know, the...
The end song by Motorhead.
Yeah.
Dunkirk!
Then my son would have to listen to it. Like, Motorhead's like his favorite band now.
Who is?
My sons, my 8-year-olds.
Motorhead's his favorite? Oh my goodness.
He loves them. He's always asking me to play Motorhead in the car.
That's good parenting right there.
He's taken with heavy metal. He loves the sound of it, so he loves motor.
What a shame I can't get my kids into it. I've tried and tried. They're like, nah. I'm like, come on.
Well, I mean, he still has that kid tendency. He loves Boney M as well. Good, but, you know, I can at least say I've got the only kid that likes Boney M and Motorhead.
Or the only person who likes Boney M on the planet.
Probably.
I mean, really?
Just don't let them listen to Childish Gambino. None of that.
Yeah, I don't play any of that garbage.
None of that.
Yeah.
Dunkirk, I saw it in the theater. I think it was the first movie I liked that I saw with my now wife. I went to see it with my dad and my then girlfriend. But she's an Anglophile. She loves all things British. You know, she spent a lot of time in Britain as a missionary. And she was like moved to tears by this movie because she loves the British stiff upper lip, like with the old man who crosses the channel to go to Dunkirk and the kid dies and he's just kind of like, well, we've got to move on, go keep going.
right. Does that even exist in England anymore?
I think it does. Because they put up with all the stuff that's going on there now.
Right.
But it's not like it's in a different way. It's in a, well, we sort of accept our destruction rather than we're going to do this thing to help stem the destruction.
A bit like Luton,
in a different direction. You know, I think it's in a more where we just accept our fate. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, nice knowing you, England. See you in the afterlife.
Yeah. Sadiq Khan is the new Churchill, not.
Well, he's just the mayor. He's not the prime minister, but they've got Theresa May. Prime minister. Not much better, you know? TBH.
Yeah.
But she was, I remember she was very moved by this movie, by that aspect of it. She also talked about how much she liked Kenneth Branagh's performance, as from an acting perspective, cause she's an actress, and there's this scene where she said, you see his face go through a bunch of different emotions. It's when there's the camera holds on him while he's watching planes in the sky. And, you know, you can tell what he's seeing just by his face. And she was talking about how much she liked his performance in the movie. But, I mean, I really enjoyed it when I saw it. I thought the narrative was a little disjointed. But, you know, it didn't quite fit together seamlessly. Mm-hmm. But I did think it was what I liked about it was it didn't give you the big history about it.
Right.
I like that it starts at the evacuation, you know.
Yeah, it throws you right in.
It throws you right in. It doesn't have, you know, you don't see Churchill over in London, you know, going through the politics of what needs to happen. You know, right. It is just you have these few characters you follow and their experiences with the evacuation of Dunkirk.
Yeah, we luckily didn't have Robbie Coltrane dressed up as Winston Churchill showing the buildup and everything. The funny thing about before I saw this, I actually watched a segment of The World at War that mentioned Dunkirk, and I emphasize mention because it really only warrants like 3 minutes in the World at War documentary series that is notorious as the great World War II documentary. Now, I haven't watched the one on Netflix, World War II in Color. Color.
Oh, yeah.
With the
yeah,
spelling. But,
very
you
much
know,
watching. I use it in class.
World at War has been the big, you know, it's always been the big thing for years for video files to,
yeah.
As the World War II documentary to top. So, but they barely, Dunkirk just doesn't register much in that telling.
It doesn't. In fact, you know, there are several movies that sort of supplement this film. I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, the same year we got Joe Wright's Darkest Hour.
Yeah, that's next on my list to watch.
And to me, that they kind of, you know, I haven't seen it, but they sort of, that would be your supplement movie to watch as a double feature. But, you know, if I was watching some of Guy Hamilton's Battle of Britain before we started recording, and, you know, the Dunkirk thing, you just see the German soldiers marching through it triumphantly, and the citizens sort of staring stoically at the Germans kind of jubilantly marching through Dunkirk. It's kind of just the footnote of this thing that just happened that's leading us up to the Battle of Britain. But yeah, I mean, Dunkirk, I think it's anytime you see it in a documentary like World at War, World War II in Color, it is just this little thing where the British were really pushed back, and, you know, they were, you know, but there is, I think Nolan recognized that there is a great story there with, the British citizens mobilizing to evacuate the people there. Because that has a lot of dramatic potential.
Yeah, and I suppose it's because Nolan is into sailing, and I guess he has his own yacht or whatever, and supposedly that's what inspired him to write the movie. And this was years ago, like he and his then girlfriend were just sailing to the area and from England, and that's when he was like, oh, what they must have gone through doing what they were doing. So that's probably where he came at this from, a totally different storytelling angle than everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Stuart, what are some thoughts you had?
Well, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good, brilliantly made, unbelievably well shot. But, yeah, like you said, just a bit of a disjointed narrative to it. It's just...
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't really looking for a 3-act structure. I just wanted to have some sort of cohesion in the story. But
a very annoying habit of showing you the same incidents, like, from three different perspectives, but, like, placing it all over the movie where you realize, oh, wait, I'm watching where Tom Hardy's you know, going down or whatever, and or he gets the other plane, and you basically end up watching the same. You know, it's like in the Van Damme movies where they would show the same kick from three different angles. It's expansion of that.
Yeah, and the reason I felt it was disjointed was because you would see these sort of incidents. I thought more could have been done to sort of make them seamless, because like you said, you would see the same incident in three different parts of the movie.
Yeah.
And that sort of, I don't know, it took me out of it a little bit. That was my only real complaint with it.
Well, it's like he's being showy. He always does that, where he does some annoying thing like that, where he thinks he's showing you how brilliant he is. And it's a problem with a lot of his movies. It's not a deal breaker for me, but it's an annoying habit I wish he'd get out of. It's kind of like the way Tarantino would do things out of order. Then it makes you wonder if he actually told the story in order, would it even have any effect? You know,
right.
And I think there was a habit of fan edits at the time, like, or, you know, editing Reservoir Dogs and or
in
Pulp
sequence,
Fiction,
yeah.
in sequence and, you know, in a cohesive fashion. I don't know how those came off to people. I don't know if I would sit through one of those, but
it's Godfather, the saga.
Right. It's that sort of kind of, it's like, well, why would you, you know, why are you doing this other than to show off or force your audience to think? And you know damn well a lot of audiences do not go to movies to think at all. They don't like to. And it can, I know that some friends of mine who, one of them was a Vietnam vet, and he went to see this, he disliked it intensively. And I think it was because of the kind of showy, disjointed storytelling, which is really just film gimmick stuff that he could have avoided it this time, I think.
Yeah, he could have done.
No, and that was my major complaint with it, but I did really like I liked the way he shot it. You know, the movie has a very big feel to it. I saw it, you know, in the on the biggest screen possible.
Yeah, I was going to ask if any of you saw it in IMAX at all.
I kept meaning to.
I didn't see it in IMAX. The only movie of his I think I've seen in IMAX is Interstellar. I think that's the only one I saw in IMAX.
Oh, okay.
Which I've never seen.
What, IMAX?
No, Interstellar.
Oh, neither have I. Okay. Didn't even know it was his, to be honest with you.
So Matthew McConaughey is an astronaut. Okay.
What? A guy in space already goes out to space? Okay.
He's already
He doesn't need to go out to space to be spaced out.
What is the goal of this film?
Yeah.
All right. I'm in space.
Already is mentally.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's worth seeing.
I mean, he definitely, what's great about the film is the stuff, the suspense sequence. I mean, it really feels like three different elongated suspense sequences stretched out to an entire film. And I should note, this is under 2 hours, which is unique for him these days.
Unique for any war film, actually.
Yeah, actually, just for nearly anybody. he's there's some great atmosphere. Like, even if I didn't see this in a theater, I saw it on home video and just checked out the Blu-ray from the library and watched it on my big screen TV. I mean, the opening sequence of the, I think it was the French guy who was kind of just running around trying to get into the evacuation ship. That whole thing came off great. Like, it was this really intense, you are there type of feeling. And I'm sure this was great if you saw it in IMAX. Like,
oh, yeah. It was really effective. Yeah. I mean, I saw it on a really big screen. I didn't see it in IMAX, but it was totally engrossing.
Right. And the aspect ratio kind of switches around a little bit on the Blu-ray. So you could tell what was shot in IMAX. It was like half the movie was filmed in IMAX.
Half. It was really the whole thing, wasn't it?
No, I don't think the whole thing was, because the ratio changes a little bit. Like Dark Knight Rises, that was like maybe 20 minutes of it was filmed in IMAX. Because there's a problem with the cameras, because they're very noisy, like when you're filming in IMAX, and it makes a problem with any audio, getting the actors' performance and stuff. Apparently, they're very distracting. So they kind of save it for action scenes.
And this movie is a lot of that. I thought the IMAX worked really well, especially in the airplane sequences with Tom Hardy. You get the vast open sea. And I thought that worked really well. It just has this big expanse to it on the big screen that, you know, it's so it just. I kind of felt like you got a little bit of the pilot experience there a little bit. Because, you know, that's what's fun about watching these World War II movies. Because I've been thinking a lot, you know, a war like World War II just doesn't happen anymore. You know, you have jets now, right? Dogfighting in jets like in Top Gun is nowhere near, you know, what it was like in World War II. Tank warfare. You know, you don't really see tank warfare anymore. And so that's a extremely exciting thing to see in movies. Mm. You know, that was something, for all the problems I have with Fury, the depiction of tank warfare in it is very exciting. But, you know, that's something about World War II movies that is very fun is the airplane dogfighting stuff. Like, you know, you watch Battle of Britain for that. You watch... Oh, what's another one? Shoot. I'm blanking out. There's tons. Oh, Midway. Midway.
Right.
There's
right,
another one. Yeah,
PT
Midway.
109's another one. I guess The Longest Day might have something in there.
Tora.
A lot of these I have not watched in decades. Like, I'd watch them on Laserdisc. That's how long ago I saw them.
But, you know, I was looking at Guy Hamilton's Battle of Britain and, you know, the stuff with airplanes, and it's very exciting. You know, it's very practical. You know, you have Harry Saltzman producing. It's very big. You know, it's... Right. It's a very large production, and, you know, you like seeing all the equipment, you know, all that stuff on display, and
like your Lemmy, and, you know, you're assembling model kits.
absolutely. But, you know, when you obsess over, like, you know, I love World War I and World War II stuff. So, you know, when you see all that stuff, it's fun. You know, it is like a model kit mentality a little bit. But in this movie, you're confined to just a few planes, and I feel like it's very intimate in how it's presented, but you get the big, vast expanse of what the pilots view and what their experience is. I thought that aspect of it was very exciting, and the experience of the old man on the ship across the channel and his encounter with Cillian Murphy's insane sailor.
right. He's like a shell-shocked survivor. And all that stuff it's pretty well done drama suspense, but, you know, sad also, and without spoiling anything. But it's that's like the main part of the film. It's not really Tom Hardy's pilot. It's not Kenneth Branagh. It's actually what's going on that boat.
That is the most moving part of the film, I think, is because that's what at the heart of the story, it's about the civilian response. That's what I think Nolan found interesting about it was.
Well, that's what hit me. I'm like, I couldn't even imagine doing that as a citizen, no matter how much I like boats or how much I love Mother England, with like no weapons. Let's just go and get some soldiers because they knew they had to. I couldn't even imagine that happening today.
Well, and it's crazy because we as Americans, we can't imagine being like the last war that was that close to home was the Civil War, the war between the states. And I think it was Abraham Lincoln who said that, you know, no foreign army could take a drink from the Ohio River. You know, this just wouldn't happen. He said, if America is going to destroy itself, it'll be destroyed from within. And so the idea,
which is happening now.
Abe. Really saw that coming.
It is happening now, and it's happening. They figured out a way to do it without warfare. You know, that's another, you know, it's, you know, you just legislate it. But when you have enemies running your government, but, you know, as Americans, we can't imagine being that close to a conflict where we go, hey, you know what? I could pitch in, you know, the only way we do that is by going, oh, I want to join up and go fight, you know, on some piece of land halfway across the world that has nothing to do with anything that I'm doing, but I'll get a college education out of it or something, you know.
Well, that's probably why a boring movie like Red Dawn has such a following, because it's a visualization of the war brought to our country, depicting an invasion. It's actually the only I really don't count the Chuck Norris movie. It's actually the only film that kind of depicts an invasion of America. Like,
yeah, and that's what was so cool about it. You know, when I heard about Red Dawn, I went, oh, dude, it's a movie about an invasion of America. Whoa, you know, what would that look like? I want to see it, you know. Yeah, Invasion USA doesn't count because it's a canon movie and they cheap it out. You
what
know?
About yeah. Toy Soldiers, man? Will Wheaton.
Anything with Will Wheaton is automatically disqualified.
Oh, yeah.
That's not even a real movie, you know.
Yeah. It's just an American remake of If with international terrorists. That's all it is.
Oh, God.
That's all it is.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's something that's completely foreign to us Ameriburgers over here. And, you know, I think the closest, I mean, Australia was invaded by the Japanese very, you know, very
still
lightly in the
is.
North.
Gold Coast is just Japanese owned these days.
Yeah, that's another way that the enemy behaves. They just buy.
They figured
all the
out
real
the
estate.
Wallet. The wallet is stronger than a gun.
Oh, yeah.
All you got to do is just buy all the like New Zealand.
Chinese. Yeah,
you know the Chinese own New Zealand. You know,
the Chinese, the Japanese own like a good portion of California. They own a lot of Chinese houses like crazy.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, so it's remarkable how much the world has changed in just a few decades. That you know, it's just economics now. You know.
Yep.
But the Britain has that experience recently of civilians saying, "Hang on a minute."
Yeah.
You can go in. Drive me boat across the channel and pick up a few blokes.
Yeah.
You know.
They should have cast Tommy Robinson in this film.
Yeah.
I was thinking I wish they'd made it in the 1950s with Sid James.
Oh, yeah. I think it would have been pretty good, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I think it would have suited it. He's got that scraggy look.
Yeah, he does.
Well, I watched him in a film noir movie that was at the film festival we had at the Alamo recently.
Mm.
And it was Sid James playing the lecherous stepfather.
Oh, God. What
he's playing
stretch.
An American. He's doing an American accent.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mentioned, and Elroy was asking me about it, and I said, well, I recognize Sid James playing an American. He's the dirty old man from the Carry On films. And Elroy went, yeah, he sure is. James Elroy is apparently a secret fan of the Carry On films, or at least is familiar with them. He was that is him. So.
Oh, yeah. There was a really good film I watched with Alec Guinness back in, I think it was about 54, it was made.
But probably yeah, Ealing Studio.
It was an Ealing Studio movie. That's right. It was. But which one? I'll let you know shortly. All right.
Yeah, it was like about five or six. So,
don't think it was the Lady Killers. Lavender Hill Mob. That was it.
Lavender Hill Mob. Okay.
Yeah. 51.
Peter Sellers is in that.
Yeah. Good movie. Really good movie. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's regarded in by film buffs.
Yeah, I can understand why.
The glory days of England. Of pop culture entertainment. Now the best movie about England is made by an Australian / American or whatever Nolan is claiming to be these days.
I don't know. Yeah, what is he? I don't know.
He's like born in Chicago, but grew up in Australia. He's confusing.
Okay, that explains why. I thought I saw an Australian flag in the background. I thought, nah, well, it's not the Union Jack, because Union Jack has the emblem emblazoned right across the whole flag. I thought, that's not an Australian flag. I can't see the Southern Cross stars on there. So, I don't know what the hell it was. It wasn't a New Zealand flag, which looks similar to ours.
It looks like he was born in London, but it says his childhood was split between London and Evanston, Illinois, and he has both British and U.S. citizenship.
Oh, nothing to do with Australia then.
Yeah, I don't know.
I kept hearing, but during the time of that first film he came out with, I kept hearing he was Australian. It's bizarre. It's like he's...
Oh, he might have spent some time like here and seen Guy Pearce in some local movies or something like that. I don't know.
Right.
Might be
better. That's what I was thinking.
But I don't think he actually lived here at all.
Right.
I don't know. It's Wikipedia, so who knows? I mean, it's not exactly the most reliable source of information.
And he also seems like somebody who's tweaked his... biography a bit.
Because
a friend of mine used to be his neighbor and claims that he's older than he claims to be.
It's like Spielberg lies about his age to seem like a boy wonder.
Does he? Does he still lie about his age? Because he's like
Spielberg used to. When he was making movies when he was really young, he made himself seem a bit younger to make himself kind of give himself this boy genius label.
How obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's got this arsenal of weapons to rival Charlton Heston's collection.
Really?
Yeah. God. Yeah, he's a total liberal hypocrite, like, because money always...
Robert Zemeckis is, too. Like, a lot of those guys from that generation, they're all big gun nuts, but they, support gun control legislation.
But I always heard, like, Zemeckis was, like, a closet, like, conservative or, he didn't hide... Because a lot of people tell me, mostly liberals will tell me Forrest Gump is conservative propaganda. I've never seen it, so I can't say.
Well, you're not missing much. But I know Bob Gale... wrote for Breitbart. That guy's a total, kind of boomer, right, boomer tier, neocon, I guess.
Of conservative ink.
Yeah, conservative ink. Bob Gale is totally conservative ink. Zemeckis is his writing partner. So, yeah, that guy's out and out, kind of Republican normie tier. But Zemeckis has the more left-leaning bona fides. But I've always heard, I think Joe Esterhaus has talked about how he's a one of these guys who frequents the gun range and, loves his guns,
Right. I heard Shane Black does too, and he's a total shit lib on social media.
I didn't know Shane Black was on social media, but, I think if you work for Marvel, you're required to be one.
Yeah.
He's made an Iron Man movie, so, it's one of those things like Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. Everybody says he's conservative, but Robert Downey Jr., will do his PSAs for Joss Whedon,
Right, and just be an idiot. I always think it's because Donald Trump has some goods on those guys. Like, he knows more about them than they want known.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not actually...
Like, they're all signaling against him way too hard.
I know a little bit more about these fellas.
Best
and brightest.
By the New York Attorney General or whatever, where Trump said... Like a tweeted like last year that he's worse.
No, this was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago. Jesus
he was
Christ.
Like he said Wiener's down, Spitzer's down. Next is Schneiderman. Very bad. Worse than either of them.
Oh wow. Yeah, but I always heard Flynn is Trump. Like, he and his brother are closet conservatives. I've heard that.
Trump,
so.
Trump's like, I at least pay my women to watch Shark Week with me.
And the Gorilla Channel.
Yeah, the Gorilla Channel.
I wish there was a Gorilla Channel. I'd watch
there
it.
There was a Gorilla Channel. I'd watch it all the time, and I'd sit there with my Harambe shrine.
Yeah. Harambe Week.
We call it the Harambe Channel now.
Right. But no, I have heard Nolan is like a closet conservative of type.
Well, you'd have to come to that conclusion if you watch his Batman movies. Those are the most right-wing movies ever.
I know. I just like, Jesus, it's like National Review, the movie.
I mean, Dark Knight Rises, I mean, it's like Batman's fighting Occupy Wall Street.
The funniest thing is all the actors are clueless to it, and all his actors are these libs.
Oh, Matthew Modine.
Yeah. Except with the exception of like Michael Caine. Like, all the actors are like these libs.
Michael Caine. Listen, I know Christopher Nolan.
Oh, wait a minute. What about Tom Hardy? Isn't Tom Hardy, no one really knows what that guy stands for?
Tom Hardy, he doesn't let his politics be anybody.
Gary Oldman.
Tom Hardy.
Doesn't hold
Tom
it.
Hardy.
Oh, Gary Oldman's the most right-wing Brit, Gary Oldman's out there, he's reading, the really hardcore stuff. Let's just put
like
it that
Roseanne.
Way.
Yeah. he's probably out there, behind when the shooting is, when they're on a break, he's probably going around talking about how Nancy Pelosi's a cunt and everything.
Yeah.
He'll give those interviews where he'll say
Playboy magazine.
Yeah, say really outlandish stuff, and people will go, "How dare you?" And he'll go, "I'm sorry, sorry. I still think these things, but I'm sorry." Well, and his manager is this guy James Urbanski, and he and I remember there was this movie, The Contender, which was this sort of liberal political thriller.
No, and, like, they all are.
Yeah. Oh, it was one of these, like, this woman becomes vice president, and you know her sexual past is. And, you know, it's one of these things where it's supposed to be like a, you know, how dare you judge Bill Clinton type movies. But Gary Oldman was in it as sort of the, you know, evil Republican senator that's trying to take her down. But Oldman was very angry with how the thing turned out in the final film. And Urbanski was giving all these interviews talking, who's his manager. He was talking about how bigoted Hollywood is towards people of his political persuasion. But Oldman has that reputation. He's probably right of center, you know. Nolan makes these movies. He's got these actors in there. You know, Michael Caine's over there going, listen, Christopher Nolan votes Tory. He's not voting Labour. He's not voting for Jeremy Corbyn. All right. He's voting Tory. He's voting for UKIP. You know, he and Nigel Farage are over there talking about getting out of the EU.
Well, he's not going to be voting for that socialist cunt, is he?
Is Dunkirk technically a post-production? Maybe the first of, what I hope would be many.
The first what production?
Post-Brexit.
Oh, I mean, it was 2017, so I guess so.
They wrote it 20 years ago, but...
I mean, it is a very... It is a... You know, you don't see nationalistic movies like this coming out very often.
Well, The Dark Star is one of them.
Movies typically, especially World War II movies, are very, you know, nations are bad. We're all one people. We're all one people with one goal. We're one race, the human race. You know, that type of tier. But Dunkirk is a very British identity, British nationalist movie. You know, this and I think that's one reason my wife was so taken with it, was because she loves British culture, British, you know, all things Anglo.
Wait.
Mm.
The only way to really gauge if your wife is truly fond of British culture. Does she like Saxon?
Oh, of course.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I actually haven't played her Saxon, but I'm sure she would like
what?
You why not?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. I you know, just haven't gotten there yet. She
even Jackie's saying, you know, get some Saxon happening. Yeah, will you?
Jackie's actually agree. She's like, what the heck? She hadn't listened to Saxon yet.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, but that's the key. That's the test. That's the acid test. I'll bust out, some Saxon, some Wheels of Steel, you know.
Yeah. So she if you can handle motorcycle man, lady, then you're a keeper.
Yeah. Dallas 2 p.m. What was it?
Yeah. That was like about the JFK assassination, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's something about Dunkirk that's rare in movies today. It's a movie that is very, you know, nationalistic in its identity. It's very British identity, you know, in how it.
Well, media writers are pretending this has never existed.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 There's no such thing as British identity. No such thing as British culture. What are you talking about?
I mean, for the last 40, 50 years, I've been claiming there's no such thing as American culture.
Oh, they've been doing that with American culture. And, you know, they've kind of memed that for so long that people believe it. But British culture, it's almost ridiculous to even entertain the notion.
There is.
There is
a British culture.
It's like.
It's ridiculous to entertain it with American culture. But they've been memeing it so hard for the past few decades that people believe it. You know, with British culture, you kind of how badly gaslit do you have to be to think that British culture doesn't exist?
I mean, well, I'll tell you what British culture is. That's what it is.
Well, motive unknown.
We don't know the motive at this time.
Yeah.
He shouted at Allah Akbar. He had a machete.
Had a long beard. Had a bomb.
Listen.
Had a cup of acid in his hand, but we don't know yet.
It was a statement against hate words.
You know what? Terrorist attacks are part and parcel with city life.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That mayor, what was his name? Sadistic cunt said that, didn't he?
I love it that the one, like, Englishman who's come to the defense of old England is Morrissey.
Yeah, I know. Like, when you're...
Like,
when you're
am I living in?
How far gone is everything? How bad are things when Morrissey is the savior of your country?
What in the world? If you told me this 20 years ago, I'd be like, get out of here.
When Morrissey is taking up the sword and shield of England, you know?
Yeah, Morrissey is the modern Richard Lionheart.
Morrissey is Richard the Lionheart, and he's going to expel the foreign invader.
Cromwell Morrissey.
You knew Susie came out and said what he said. There was a mass burning of Smith's records like the Beatles ones back in the 60s.
When Morrissey is the new Nigel Farage.
The hell? Based Morrissey.
Morrissey.
Where do we get to this point?
Because I've always thought, oh my gosh, Morrissey, you know, anytime, he's just going to talk about, oh, there was a shooting. Well, it's nothing compared to what KFC does every day. Like, Jesus, so stupid like that. But lately, Morrissey is, like, more hardcore than UKIP.
It's like in America, Roseanne's a defender of the blue-collar working.
I know, what the hell? Like, it's the same thing in America. This is the clown world we live in, that Roseanne Barr is the most right-wing figure in Hollywood right now.
Clint Eastwood of today. What the hell? I don't get it. It's like, what the hell time machine did I step through?
Roseanne revival is making Hollywood do soul searching.
What is this Rick and Morty bullshit that I'm living in?
It's Rick and Morty. I'm telling you, Morty, we know it's not Morty. We know it's all meaningless because Roseanne is telling us our political views that are true. Morty.
Jeez. I mean, I've only watched like two episodes of Rick and Morty. I'm very, very late to this train because the fans really got on my nerves telling me how great it was.
Since Morrissey came out as a right-wing Nazi man, I burned all my Smith records. What's next? Robert Smith and the Cure is going to be a Nazi as well.
That reminds me that I got to start looking at Amazon for some Smith's box sets for cheap.
Oh, they'll be cheap now.
People are $4.99 right now.
But yeah, when Morrissey was going hardcore, my wife had no idea who Morrissey was. I was like, oh, let me play you some Smiths.
You see, obviously, don't want the marriage to last then, do you? Fucking hell, the Smiths are terrible.
Yeah, well, she was kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever. You know,
well, I have listened to them because I found like a cheap CD at a garage sale for like 25 cents and listened to them. And I think lyrically they're interesting. Musically, it's not my thing.
Well, lyrical. I mean, I think a lot of Morrissey's song, like "The Queen Is Dead," is a really funny song.
Yeah, the songwriting's very witty, and there's something to it.
And if you want to see a really terrible movie from last year, "England Is Mine," the Morrissey biopic, the young Morrissey biopic, was not good. But it depicts Morrissey in a band with a young Billy Duffy.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
really. They were in a band together, apparently.
No, because I figure, what is that going to depict? Him eating carrots and eating dick. Like 2 hours. We have to be 2 hours. Especially if it's about homosexuals and performing
actually,
artists.
There's actually, you know, remarkably little homosexual stuff in it. It was just like him writing and trying to figure out who liked
him. Yeah, he doesn't like anybody knowing he's gay, even though everybody knows. So
everybody knows. You know, I've heard a lot of his fans complain that his band sucks because it's who has the best abs, not who can play well.
Right.
But But yeah, no, there was no homosexuality in the movie that I recall, but there was him, you know, having a meltdown because Billy Duffy leaves him to be in another band. It's his man to be in another band. I remember Marcy. He was just like, Billy, Billy, Billy. And I was like, who's this Billy guy? And I looked at, I was like, oh, wait, that's Billy Duffy. He's got blonde, spiky hair and stuff.
And abs.
Billy Duffy, great guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, featured in Rock Month, cult episode. Go listen.
He yeah, was. Definitely worth it. I'm on his mailing list. I hope to win a Billy Duffy signed guitar one day.
I saw him open for Guns N' Roses, you know.
Yeah, skilled guitarist. But yeah, that's just wacky. It's like, I don't know what the hell world I'm in these days. I'm really going to hide in my basement for the next 10 years.
Honk, honk.
Can I send you a Marvel t-shirt if you're going to do that?
Well, no, that's out and about nowadays in American culture. It's I knew it was over when I saw like a hot girl in Austin wearing a Ramones t-shirt back in 2005 or so.
I was going to say, that must have been a while ago because I saw the Ramones invasion coming a while back, you know?
Yeah. No, I just like when you suddenly see like everybody wearing Marvel comics crap and adults like buying Marvel toys and shit or going to like adults with no kids going to like Friday night screenings of the latest Marvel movie. It's just the world's too weird for me. I can't deal with that.
Oh, let me ask you guys one question. I've got to ask this.
Mm-hmm.
What would you rather disappear forever? Marvel films or Star Wars films?
Star Wars films.
Star Wars, it's dead. It's so finished.
Okay.
Just there's nothing there. It's nah. It's just super. You might get a good Marvel movie one day, maybe.
I have yet to see a good Star Wars movie since Disney took it over, you know, and they were not doing well before that. And what was it? Solo is about to come out. And I saw people online saying, I don't know if I'm going to see Solo. People going, yes, you are. You're going to go see it. You know, shut up. And I chimed in and I said, I am not going to see it because Star Wars is dead for me. The Last Jedi killed it forever. I'm sorry, but the movie has to get rave reviews from people I trust for me to go to see a new Star Wars movie because The Last Jedi was that bad.
Okay, let me ask you another question. You've got to watch one of these two films, The Last Jedi or Attack of the Clones?
Attack of the Clones.
I'll watch okay. Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, I mean, it's a
bad didn't
film,
like it, but I didn't hate it. So
Attack of the Clones has some decent sequences. Like, I actually, it has Christopher Lee, for one. It's got, you know, the stuff with Obi-Wan kind of hunting Jango Fett has some cool stuff. And, you know, there's some decent, like, Ray Harryhausen-style monsters in it. You know, it has a few things you can like, but as far as the prequels go, it is the most dire of the three, probably.
Do any of these new ones have monsters? Like Last Jedi, is there any monsters in there?
There's a monster with several breasts, and Luke milks it and drinks its milk.
And that's it? There's no, like, cool monster? Jeez. Somebody's fighting in a pit?
I'm trying to think.
that's Mark Hamill sucking on the tit of liberalism.
Yeah, no, Mark Hamill, like, drinks, like, blue monster milk from
that's
its
tit.
That's
Bantha milk,
and,
isn't it? That they had back in
no,
the...
it's not a Bantha. It's, like, some weird creature that just lounges on the beach, and he just goes and drinks it. And I remember watching that and going, what is going on? And, no, I don't think there was any monster anything in that one.
Where's like the Republic cliffhanger thrills and stuff and like the monster danger? Like it's out of a Edgar Rice Burroughs novel. That's what's kind of fun about Empire. And,
well, and in Attack of the Clones, you even had that. You had the big monster fight.
Well, the arena is total fighting, you know, Warlord of Mars stuff. Like I picked up on that right away when I saw it. So it's like, where's the cool monsters and everything? Like, when I was a kid, what I loved, the scene I loved the most was the cantina scene because of all the creatures.
Yeah.
Hammerhead and all that shit.
Exactly. And in The Last Jedi, the only monsters are the, you know, social justice warriors that you see populating the resistance.
Bunch of blue haired women.
Yeah. Like Laura Dern with her pink hair, you know.
Oh, God.
And you know, there's a Greyhound type racing track with these weird furry creatures, and they go and liberate the creature. Here's how you know the movie's made by really stupid people, is that Finn and Rosie go and liberate the creatures running on the track, but they don't liberate the child slaves. They have to stay. But the monster, the creatures being forced to race, the animals are freed. And we're supposed to be happy about that.
Who are the freaks making these movies? Oh, my God. Oh, jeez. I just want to punch the filmmakers in the face just hearing about this stuff.
Yeah, no, but that's one of the things about the movie that's so head-slappingly stupid. Is there's this whole segment where they go to this casino planet and they free the creatures, but there are these child slaves minding them and they're forced to stay. they don't pay any mind to them, but they get the little stories about they're inspired when they see them.
Star Wars movies are for assholes now. It's just...
that's who The Last Jedi is for. I mean, it is such a awful movie.
Yeah, they make them for assholes. They make them just for complete. They make them for the assholes that, you know, have the mean people suck bumper stickers on like a giant SUV.
Coexist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, while they live in their all white neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
and gated communities.
Yeah, they're
gated. It's coexist sticker. And they're nowhere near a friggin' mosque.
Yeah. No, they don't. They don't. Diversity for thee, but not for me. But,
exactly.
But yeah, no, that's an example of how stupid that movie is. But yeah, you don't have any of the exciting stuff. Like, you know, Return of the Jedi, not a great movie. Has the Rancor, I almost said Rancor pit. The Rancor pit scene. That was a cool, like, Harryhausen style sequence, you know.
Yeah, I mean, jeez. Why doesn't Germany just start making Perry Rhodan movies? That's going to be just comparable to Star Wars at this point.
Right.
Ugh, fucking Star Wars. It's for assholes.
Anyway, yeah. No,
okay, another question.
What would I rather watch? Marvel movies any day, even though I hate them, but occasionally I'll see one that I enjoy, so...
They have joke every now and then, Hunter. They have a good quip.
Yeah,
it's
like
a sitcom.
No, I'm sorry, the Guardians movies are mildly enjoyable.
They have a nice little AM Gold tune, like popped out of nowhere.
If you could get rid of one person off the airwaves altogether, or just like in existence, not kill them, but I'm just saying, just like never have to hear from them again. Who would it be? Would it be Eddie Trunk or Eddie Trunk?
Boy, that's a tough one.
There's way worse things out there than Eddie Trunk.
Every 4 months, I'll remember our gimmick, and I'll just go to YouTube and find the latest Eddie Trunk clips, and then just get mad and ignore them for another 4 months.
Eddie Trunk at least provides good material. You know, there are people like Marc Maron who need to be banished from society, so...
Great interview with William Friedkin, though, but it's basically William Friedkin interviewing himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Friedkin's good no matter who's talking to him.
Yeah, ask him one question. He's just going to go on for like 45 minutes.
That clip of him talking to Nick Winding Refn cracked me up. Somebody gave this man a medic. He said his own movie is a masterpiece.
Ambulance.
Citizen Kane. It lasts. 70 years old and it lasts.
Oh, man. He's a dream guest. He's the guest we'll never get for the show, but he's like a dream guest.
He was in Dallas the other night.
Was he? Oh, man.
Yeah, he did a double feature of his new movie and The Exorcist.
Oh, one of our listeners was going to attend one of those screenings.
We got to get a report.
Yeah.
See how it was.
I can't remember who, but somebody mentioned they were going. Probably several of our listeners are going. We got to start getting in touch with our spies.
He's got to get a little tour going, you know.
Yeah.
I met him back in 2002. Freaking.
Was it a sorcerer screening?
Yeah, 25th anniversary screening of the Sorcerer. Yeah, he did a Q&A afterwards for 2 hours. And then did a signing in the lobby as well after that.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah.
Sorcerer, maybe his best movie. It's very good.
Oh, yeah.
I love Sorcerer. It's terrific. And then he totally screwed up my head in the Mark Maron interview because he said that at the ending, Roy Scheider is not killed. He said, you just hear the backfire of a truck. You're not hearing a gun go off.
Oh, really?
To me, it seemed like
motherfucker.
No, I just assumed he was going to die. You know?
Yeah, that's what I thought. And he goes, that whole bar, everybody in that bar owes Roy Scheider their life. So, and he says, the real question is, are the two hitmen going in going to come
So you really
alive?
Don't know.
Yeah, he just
know what happened to Roy's character.
He got total verbal judo with the whole concept. You know? He's fooled us for decades.
It's that high verbal IQ, am I right?
I watched that movie with my cousin like years ago. I watched Sorcerer, and I said, it's a great movie, you got to watch it. In the end, he goes, the movie just fucked me up. Just like, well, now I could tell you that that wasn't the ending he intended, or you didn't want you to think that was the ending. So whatever.
Whatever.
No, well, I think we're done.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what are we going to grade this film?
Dunkirk. What do we rate this, gentlemen? I'm going to go ahead and stick with my original rating when I saw it, which was a 9. I think it's a very strong piece. I think it has very strong moving themes that you don't see in movies very often anymore. Really liked that about it. Strong performances for the most part. It just has a few little things like the narrative framing that, you know, had some issues, and but that was about it. I mean, I think it's one of Nolan's stronger films.
I enjoyed it more than Inception, anyway.
Oh well, ugh. Yeah. Inception is his worst movie.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go out. I mean, like, Insomnia is better than Inception. Inception is that is one of the most overrated movies of the recent past, you know?
Yeah, really is. All right, I will rate this, I'll give it a 7. It's definitely worthy of that. It needs another watch from me, for sure, because I just got lost in what he was trying to convey with the story of the film.
I wonder if he does that on purpose just to get you to watch it again.
Yeah. I've felt like a lot of his movies warrant another watch. I've seen Interstellar a couple of times. This one I've seen once. I need to watch it again. But yeah, I think he does. A lot of his movies do that.
Yeah, I'll give it an 8. I say it's his best since The Prestige, which I still think is his best movie.
The Prestige is a fantastic movie.
That's my favorite of his. Yep, it's excellent.
Yeah, Prestige is like an easy 9 for me.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
If I watch it again, I might even give it a 10.
Like, yeah, I mean, no, yeah, that one might be a 10 for me. I think that is a terrific film.
That's one of the best movies of the 21st century.
Oh, absolutely.
From the greatest filmmaker working on Christopher Nolan, the genius.
It's got David Bowie as Tesla.
This is but I thought Dunkirk's a very good film. I think I could watch it 10 years from now and still be impressed with it. I don't know if I could say the same for the Batman movies, which I'm not even a fan of The Dark Knight, but in his other work, like, I haven't seen the Pacino movie since I saw it on VHS of all things. It's just, it's worth seeing. And I think you have to understand, it's not a history lesson. It's a drama and tribute to English, Mother England, you know, patriotism and all that, nationalism.
Yeah, and I think if you want to supplement, and I haven't seen Darkest Hour, but I assume that one is a good supplement, perhaps. I have the Blu-ray. I need to sit down and watch it.
By the way, word of advice to any young viewers, don't get your history from a movie.
No, of course not. No, please. No.
I speak as someone who wasted much time minoring. I have a minor in history in my college career, so do not watch movies for history lessons.
No, movies are not history, and I think that's one of the grave problems of the 20th century. Yeah. Is a lot of people get their history from movies, and
they totally do.
You know, unfortunately, movies do form our historical narratives, and that's a mistake.
Yeah, but, like, even a TV miniseries. Like, when I watched Rough Riders, I was so disappointed that certain characters were really combinations of 3 or 4 characters, and I was like, ah, man, come on. So you can't even give me the thing in a miniseries? Jeez, Milius, come on.
Yeah, no, I know. It's, and even that one is, it leaves out a lot of the dastardly stuff the U.S. was up to.
I enjoyed it, but it has problems. It's not history. You just can't watch movies for history.
That's because the U.S. is a racist country and doesn't care about gay people.
With movies, I think like a movie like Dunkirk, these are dramatizations of historical events. I think Dunkirk does a good job of being an explicit dramatization. It's about fictitious characters in the battle.
Well, I have to disagree because there's no Hispanics in there or Native Americans.
That was a common criticism of this movie, that it wasn't diverse enough.
I only spotted one black person.
They claim there were soldiers from India in the battle.
Yeah, which of course the movie needs to be about them, you know. Yeah. It's one of those things where we need our modern quotas filled on these things. And that's just, again, it's the danger of getting your history from movies. Movies will try to deceive you with history in order to fulfill a modern agenda. But absolutely 100% echo what John says. Don't, get your history from books, and even be careful about what books you read,
Yes.
So, a lot of books are BS too.
Just read Will Durant. Just stay the course for a while on Will Durant, then read other stuff.
Yeah, just be judicious about judging about what you read, be discerning, but also be discerning with what you watch, especially because movies are movies. They're meant to be entertaining. Dunkirk, I think, does a good job of being just that. It's not a big history movie. It takes a historical event and creates drama around it.
Right. It's like Guns of Navarone, except more believable.
Guns of Navarone, written by a communist, by the way.
of course.
But no, I think we're all in agreement. This is a good film. Watch it if you haven't. It's definitely one of the better movies of last year. It's probably my second favorite movie of last year.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, yeah, well, Rock Month is coming up, everybody.
Yes, it is.
So, once again, we'll be hitting the power chords. Right?
Yep. Putting the iPod into overload,
Yeah.
I think for any research we do, Rock Month is the most research we do.
Yeah, it is. Much. Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God. King's X. Having to learn about that band, I had like 5 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw them live again since we did that episode.
Oh, really?
Jeez.
Nice.
Yeah. It's great. Anyway.
I've got to click the pick idea. But
at least
I'll
we challenge ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, our next episode will be our little... lead into Rock Month, so it'll be good.
Indeed.
It will be.
Indeed.
All right,
everybody. Well, let's go ahead and just hit the old dusty trail. I'm just going to go ahead and say adios.
I'll say corporations suck.
Corporations!
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.